Daily news, breaking updates, and exclusive podcasts. iTricks.com.
Hello and welcome to the Magic Week in Review, bringing you news, rumor, and culture reports from the front lines of the magic industry. I'm Justin Robert Young, editor of iTricks.com, and in this, the Valentine's Day, February 14th edition of the program, you will hear about the Blackpool dealer's room, whether the ceiling is coming down or not, the legacy of Pat Page, the favorite illusions of several Vegas headliners, and stay tuned to the end of this very podcast to hear about a 20-year-old sophomore in college who is currently playing half times at NBA arenas across the country. But here to help me with all of this is an inventor, a performer, a real-life cartoon. He is certainly a legend. Ladies and gentlemen, Sylvester the Jester, Dan Sylvester, welcome to the iTricks Magic Week in Review. How you doing, Dan?
Thank you. Well, thank you, Justin, and happy Valentine's Day to all those magic lovers out there.
Exactly. You know, that is a weird... Valentine's Day is a weird holiday for magic because, you know, it's not exactly a great booking day. And, you know, I don't know if you've picked up on this, Dan, but not the most social lot, magicians in general.
Yeah, that's a sad truth. They're not always the best with women either. I know.
Yeah,
you know,
not legendary Lotharios.
Yeah, that's probably myself too. So, but I do have a girlfriend for 4 years now. So somehow I've managed it. You know.
There we go. So there is in fact faith. You know, or keep the faith, folks. Is there is in fact hope. All right. Here we go. Before we get started, I want to remind you guys about some of the folks who bring you each and every Magic Week in Review episode. And really, iTricks is a website. Of course, they are our friends at TrickShopMagic.com. Real quick, let's talk about what is new that you can buy right now at TrickShopMagic.com. Mojo by John Kennedy. You can miraculously vanish a hot coffee from the cup without drinking it, of course. The demo video is fantastic. It's up on iTricks right now. Just, search for John Kennedy and Trick Shot Magic. The Bendix Bombshell Wallet from Dave Bendix and Martin Breeze. It's a classics Bendix Bombshell. You know, it is back. It was gone for a little bit, and now it's finally back. For a limited time, get the DVD, World's Greatest Card to Wallet, when you purchase the Bendix Bombshell from TrickShotMagic.com. The Fourth Key Book Test, the brand new book test from Peter Nardi and Alakazam Magic. And you want to know what? If you want to kick it a little old school, how about you go by and pick yourself up a copy of 13 Steps to Mentalism by Corinda for you or a friend? Maybe that'd be a sweet Valentine's Day present. You know, get your honey 13 Steps to Mentalism by Corinda. It's all available at TrickShopMagic.com, bringing you the brick-and-mortar experience to the internet one click at a time. Head on over there right now and tell them Old Jury sent you, Justin Robert Young. Because, you know, Sam's awesome. And if you like this podcast and you like keeping this podcast free, not that we'd ever charge for it, then, you know, go support the sponsors.
This will be the first one.
Yes, exactly. all right, here we go. Let's start with the news of the week. Dirk Arthur, Lance Burton, Nathan Burton, and Rick Thomas, as well as Teller, of course, at Penn and Teller, picked their favorite illusions of their act and revealed the origins behind the signature effects in the Las Vegas Review Journal. For example, Nathan Burton picked out his Microwave of Death, which, I don't know, for our money, doesn't really get enough credit for kind of dancing along possibly dangerous racial lines while remaining such a family-friendly crowd-pleaser. But, go ahead and read the story on the site. Let me ask you this, Dan. Of all the stuff that you do, what is your favorite?
Gee whiz, I got a few favorite ones, but I got, the exploding head thing and the hole in the body. And I think that my favorite is the binoculars, I guess, which is a small illusion. But before I did it, I really had no, I think the audience was confused as to my character, what it was. But that was something that I had to develop and had to put at the very beginning of my show, because it said, you know, that guy's a cartoon. You know, as soon as you see that image with the jaw dropping down, the eyes bugging out huge, you can't come to any other conclusion but that.
Yeah.
And so making that, or, you know, coming up with that and finally having it exist was a real turning point for me. I mean, even no matter how good the show got or how good the illusions or the sound effects or whatever, all the other elements, the audience still could be confused because it, unlike, I don't know, Mike Michaels, for example, a robot is less than human, you know.
Yeah.
And you could imitate a robot perfectly, but imitating a cartoon, which is, you know, far beyond what any human can do, is very, you know, really difficult because the way they move and the way they stretch and the way they do just crazy stuff. So when I did that specific illusion, it seemed like it got kind of people on my side. And the fact that it was funny at the same time of that, which is also very difficult to create something that is both a magic trick and funny at the same time and gets both things. I don't know if people have any idea how difficult that is. Most of the time it happens by accident.
But, well, you know, I think it is, you know, maybe the greatest challenge in magic in terms of, you know, performing in theatrics is getting that kind of genuine reaction. Because, I mean, you know, it's been said before in terms of acting that, you know, getting a laugh is harder than making somebody cry. And I think that's, you know, no less true when you're doing magic stuff.
Well, I've done both of the nose hair trick because I make myself cry, and for me, I don't even know. Some people look at the stuff that I do and they don't even think it is magic, and other people, you know, think it's very sophisticated magic. So I have this big spectrum of what's what. But you know, that's always really how I've been, whether it was in art, you know, as an art student or whatever. I've always been trying to, you know, I don't know, cross lines or go places where, you know, like gray areas. I like the gray areas of uncertainty, you know.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
Where I kind of mingle around there.
That's where you live?
Yes.
All right. Yeah, we cannot get any further in this podcast without talking about the passing of Pat Page. He unfortunately succumbed to, you know, some.
Yeah,
really, really, you know, brutal personal illness. You know, I'll tell you, I don't even want to get so much, you know, farther into any kind of news part of it. You know, Dan, what would you say Pat Page's legacy is to the industry?
Well, of course, he's a great magician, well known, and especially in you know, in Europe and England, he's been a like a master to other people. He'd be like the Di Vernon of, you know, over there.
Yeah.
I know that my friend Simon Drake, that he was working with me for a few weeks on an illusion that he wanted to do. And we're, you know, wanted me to make all these different things. And I was going, well, I don't know if I can make that, you know. And
yeah.
And then I was sending him things back and forth from here to there and just working on some stuff. And then he had this idea, and this is often the hardest thing to do because in your head you think of the most wonderful, grandiose thing that you can give to the audience. And then Patrick Page came along and he showed this illusion to him, and he just was able to see the essence of what he needed and what was peripheral, I guess. And that's a kind of a harsh thing, but sometimes you have to say that to yourself. I'm not saying that to Simon, but this is what he conveyed to me, that Pat said, you know, just get rid of all this. Here's the essence of the trick, bam. And actually, he got rid of all the stuff that I created. But at the same time, what it did was, you know, Simon was going for is he had these hot coals and was making smoke come off of it. And it seemed to Patrick Page, I guess, that the illusion that he was first beginning to set up just did not seem not realistic enough, but that anybody would do that.
Yeah.
So he just, you know, simplified it to the core essence of what he needed to pull off what he wanted to do. And so, And China said, oh, he does that all the time. He was very helpful, and I guess he used to work in the cabaret when Simon had his
TV show.
Secret Cabaret. That he was a consultant. And well, I remember when I was a kid, I picked up Patrick Page's book that he had. I can't remember what the title was called. I think, but in any event, it had the first picture of a dove harness that I'd ever seen, you know, and it was like a really professional book that I found at the library, and I was like, how did this accidentally get in here, you know?
Yeah.
And it was like finding something that was so special, and it had, you know, probably older methods of magic tricks, but to see anything like that in a book, it could really start you off thinking you have something, not that you didn't have something special, but it was just a gateway into all kinds of illusions. The next thing I knew, I was producing doves and, you know, doing all kinds of, just really, I mean, because, magic, my brain is just exploding with the ideas that came out of this, you know, because you see something on stage that a magician does, and if you don't understand magic very much, which I feel that, like, most people don't.
No.
Your brain, suddenly, basically, you're seeing past all the constructs that we have. I mean, most of the time, this is the thing, my whole thing that I'm onto lately, that magic isn't a lie. Magic is the truth, and reality isn't really a lie either, but the reality is that we can't see reality for what it is. We see only a simplistic version of it all the time, and magic reminds us of that. And as soon as you see this artifice of this or that, these props that are used on stage, and see the inner workings of something like that, it really just unleashes something in your mind. You start to question everything around you, like how things work, what's inside, what's causing this, how many people think about all the inner workings of a car when they drive it? Most people don't. They don't think about the inner workings of the microwave. You know, it's a nice box. It's a magic box. You put things in, it comes out finished. You know, same thing with the TV. And really, same thing with everything. But I remember getting that book and just being so turned on by it a long time ago. Not really wanting to return it to the library. Do you know what book I'm talking about? I don't even remember what the name was, but it was really exciting, though.
Well, I'll tell you what, that is definitely food for thought. I think that might be the most deep that we've ever gotten here on the Magic Week in Review. As soon as we start questioning the very nature of reality, you know, we've crossed some sort of threshold.
Yeah, I thought that was our whole job.
It is. No, I'm loving it. Very, very cool. Certainly, I think you mentioned Simon Drake, who knew Pat very, very well. We hope to have Simon on sometime soon to talk about it. I spoke with him the next day after Pat passed, and he's planning on doing some stuff on his website, and we definitely want to have him on. So, on some levels, the legacy speaks for itself, but it's always good for people to spell it out a little bit. And I'm glad that you were able to do so eloquently, Dan.
Well, I don't know if that was eloquent, but I just gave it a shot.
Well,
trust me.
I've never
actually met him, though. So as far as I know, I mean, I could have met him long time ago and just didn't recognize who he was, you know, when I was a kid. I mean, I never, you know, when I started off, I'd never really entered the world of magicians as much as the world of magic, you know. Didn't know. So it was funny because my friends were terrified of talking to Di Vernon because they knew who he was, and I had no idea who he was, never even heard of him before. And so I went up and just started doing magic and talked to him and instantly became friends with him, which is kind of funny because years and years later, the same sort of thing happened to me. There was a guy at the Magic Castle and he was like, oh, that's Sylvester the Jester. And man, I want to talk to him. And then this other guy was his friend, goes, it's just a guy, and started coming up to me and talking to me and became like good friends with me.
Awesome.
So it's just like, I think we put so much, size and stature to people who just because they do, you know, magic, you know, or I don't know why, what it was all about, but I just kind of thought that was funny that other people were still very nervous to talk. I mean, there were people I was nervous to talk to. I mean, I was probably equally nervous doing magic for amateurs that I was, you know, doing magic or, you know, talking with Di Vernon, but which is, I don't know, maybe that's more strange. But
That is very strange. You are a strange man, Dan Sylvester.
Well, that's nothing new.
All right. We got, you know, this is going to be the last podcast before the big Blackpool convention, of course, the largest over there in the UK. And right on the metaphorical eve of this massive get together, we had reports that the ballroom, which is used as the dealer's room during the convention, had a ceiling that was caving in. Our old weekend writer Andrew Webb investigated the claims for his Magic Convention Guide site and found that things were a little bit overblown. Apparently, structural engineers confirmed that it was loose paint flaked from the ceiling when a concert sound check was done at full volume by accident. However, this kind of incident sort of typifies the fact that, like, there is really just this love-hate culture with Blackpool, and I think it would be, you know, for whatever side of that aisle you fall on, you know, it seems like, you know, it kind of is drawn in the lines of whether or not you like, you know, Derek Lever, the head of the Blackpool, you know, he's, you know, kind of top dog over there, and, you know, whether he likes you. But, you know, this is really almost like hollowed ground in terms of, you know, the magic industry. It is, you know, just absolutely massive. But what's your take on this, Dan? I mean, is it just kind of another symptom of how backbiting the industry is?
I don't want to talk negative of people that I don't even know, because I don't really even know Derek Lever. All I know is that I always wanted to get booked there because I'm, you know, I've only done two things in London or in England before. Two conventions. You know, I mean, I've been to Spain probably like 12 times and, you know, France just as many times. I've been to London, to China more times than I've, you know, visited. And yet English humor and Monty Python and, you know, probably Benny Hill and all those, you know, all the great English comedians were bigger influence on me than probably anybody else. So I really wanted to go there. And I always thought that I would do really well with that audience, but I seem to never be able to get booked for that convention. So I'm always, so I probably have a, you know, a prejudice about that convention, the fact that, you know, you don't like me. So that's kind of how I feel.
Oh, that is an injustice. Dan, you know, come on. How can you not book Sylvester the Jester? That's what I'm trying to say.
I have no idea. Then what, another kick in the proverbial, well, just with kicking the gonads, is a couple years ago they had a guy there who was doing this, they hired him and he was doing this trick where he's making steam come out of his ears. And then right away a magic company went and bought this effect on them, and I'm going, look, like two spots below, I don't want to name their name or anything like that. I said two spots below their advertisement where they're advertising this is the Sylvester Pitch DVD where I'm doing the same exact effect on stage. You know, my mind's like 10 times more, you know, spectacular. But the fact of the matter is, and, you know, people say, this is what I got from people in response. You can't claim you invented that trick. Cartoons do that all the time.
Well, that seems a little silly.
Flabbergasted. Yeah, I said, well, guess what? Cartoons aren't real.
Yeah.
Did you ever think of that? You know. And then, of course, you know, I said, well, show me any picture besides, you know, a clown making a baby powder come out of their ears that duplicates that effect that anyone has ever done ever live on stage, ever in the history of, you know, of entertainment. That I know of, no one has ever done it live. I mean, people have done it on television where they're standing in front of a pipe that has, you know, steam or whatever blasting out the sides. Red Skelton did this, apparently, but it wasn't done live. It could only be done in front of a camera because it had to be set up so the shot was... But, I mean, you know, no one's ever built a device that they could wear to do this. And I was very, very irritated by it. And not only that, well, of course, I didn't know about it because I don't go fishing around for like this, but nope.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have said that. Been fishing
around it's no problem.
Okay, but I was, I mean, a half a dozen people called me, asked me if I was putting this out. And then and the fact that this guy went to Blackpool, nobody even said anything to him. That irritated me. So, like I said, I probably have a prejudice about Blackpool, so maybe I shouldn't say anything. I don't know Derek Lever, don't know any of the people who have anything to do with it, but that's my feeling. That's the only thing I could say about it.
Well, you know,
I always wanted to go. If they said, hey, Sylvester, we're inviting you, I'd say, sure. I always want to go there, you know? But
you know, it just seems very, very weird to me. And obviously, you know, if you know, Derek Lever is a strong personality, then he is certainly one of many in this industry. It just seems so weird that Blackpool, that there's just this real, almost just visceral, hate. There's just kind of very little mushy middle of people who are like, I don't know, Blackpool's cool. You know, it's either like,
well,
yay,
you know, I mean,
or like off with their heads.
People bring that on, you know. I mean, people, that's how people feel about me, probably, because they either love me or hate me or whatever. And I think it's just that that you feel passionately about something. And I don't know Derek Lever, so I'm talking, you know, out of my ear here. But
yes,
I'm
along
just,
with the steam.
Yeah, right. I'm not trying to defend the guy or anything like that. I just know that typically when you have a love-hate relationship with somebody, you usually have a strong personality or somebody who's passionate about something, although I can't say I know what it is because I don't know the guy at all. I'm not even sure if I've ever met him. So I couldn't point him out in a lineup, you know.
All right. Well, all right. Long story short, let's go ahead and get Sylvester the Jester booked for the next Blackpool. And I will say this, you can go ahead and book Sylvester the Jester and get in touch with him by going to SylvesterTheJester.com, which is your brand new website you just debuted, right?
Yep. And I got a few new things on there that are available, the Little Wonder Pocket Volcano and the Branding Iron thing that I have. And in the future, I should have a lot more stuff up there that I'm been working on. So yeah, they could take a look at that. And you know, if you have any comments, you know, give throw them my way too, because I'm really ignorant about stuff like this, but doing as good as I can. So.
All right. Well, yeah, everybody head over there. I'll tell you, it's a gorgeous website. I really do like it. It looks,
thanks.
It looks very, very slick.
I did the
slick.
Artwork myself.
Oh, you did? That's awesome.
Yeah. So, but the, as far as HTML and putting that stuff together, I'm a little clueless as to exactly how that works. As a matter of fact, I put down my thought that somehow the pictures were actually made by code that you put in there, and they had to convert each picture into some kind of code. And that's what I thought HTML was. I had no idea that it actually had pictures separate until I saw the guy doing it, you know, and then I saw it and doing it. I thought, this isn't as hard as I thought. But I guess everything's kind of like that. You just, in your mind, you imagine everything to be so, or at least I do. I imagine things to be often so much more complex than they actually are. So.
Yeah, I know. I hear you. All right, we have an email that came in. This was actually a couple weeks ago, and this is one of those a negative email, not necessarily about the podcast in general, but one of our recent guests, and you know, I'm not gonna name him, but apparently we had a guest on that did a giveaway where if you joined his mailing list, then you would be in the running for one of his effects, to get one of his effects for free. And, I guess he, according to this emailer, Simon, he abused that privilege and started spamming people, and his emails didn't have an unsubscribe, instruction on it or anything. So what we want to do is just let everybody know who's listening to the podcast that in the future, when we have somebody who's doing a mailing list building freebie giveaway or just like a plug or whatever, we will take the extra step to just kind of make sure that they do the basic rules of like, hey, don't email them every day. You know, do you have an unsubscribe thing just so people, if they don't want to get it, they don't have to get it. So we're looking out for you guys. Thank you very much, Simon, for emailing this in. And show@itricks.com if anybody has any other questions, concerns, or complaints about this very podcast, The Magic Week in Review. As we mentioned at the top of the show, a 20-year-old magician who is a college sophomore has been playing NBA arenas on the cheap. He's given them a big style illusion show for $12,500 less than most halftime acts. This is, of course, an offer that many NBA franchises who are currently struggling under the weight of the sagging economy simply cannot refuse. Dan, you know, he's a young kid. You got to really admire his hustle for getting out there and getting work, especially identifying a niche that as he gets, you know, bigger and better, he can really kind of make some money at. But at the same time, is he damaging the market for other magicians by charging so much less?
Well, I think I see both sides of this, really, because, I mean, if you look at, I mean, I'm not, you know, crazy capitalist or anything like that, or think that I just look at this one element that in our economy, kind of the way it works is whoever can bring in the cheapest bid on something gets the job. And all the artistic part that we all care about doesn't mean shit to anybody who's the buyer. They can't tell good magic half the time from crappy magic. You know, it means more to us than it does to the general public out there. I mean, I've been an artist for years, ever since I was a little kid, and I found that the same was true then, that people buy what they like. They don't buy it up based on knowledge and how good it really is, because they don't know. That's basically has more to do with us, what we think is good or not. So if this kid can make a living doing that, sure, he's going to put a bunch of people maybe out of business or temporarily out of business, and that sucks for them, and that's, you know. But at the same time, the economy is going downhill, so he is just, exploiting, I don't know if that's the right word, but he's finding a niche because a niche has been open. People don't have a lot of money now necessarily, and sometimes they're afraid to spend it on entertainment.
Yeah.
Although I've also found that during tough times when people are depressed, they're actually more likely to spend it on entertainment because they're a little scared about the things that really made sense. You know, talking about constructs again, you know, you have the economy, you have when the things that people know and understand don't seem to work right anymore. They go back to, well, just, you know, fill my heart. I'm in pain right now, and they want to satisfy that. So, you know, like as always, I'm a Libra. I see both sides of everything all the time. So I could really understand, you know, magicians who are being put out of business, or not necessarily. I don't see why anyone would be put out of business, but who are saying, hey, man, how come? I'm probably the same way. I probably undersell myself because I don't know any better. And maybe that's what this kid was. I had no idea how much other people ask for their, I mean, do they get more than $10 a show? It's possible that the guy was just very naive and went in there, well, and they just took advantage of it. Who knows?
Yeah, that might be it. Apparently he was working as a photographer for the Oklahoma City Thunder, and that's where he kind of got the in to sort of start doing half times there. Here is my defense for anybody who would say that, you know, he's taking, you know, food off the table for other magicians. It's not like at every hockey and basketball game across the country that there's a magician at every halftime or after every second period if it's hockey. You know, this is a relatively rare kind of thing. That's the reason why they do have the guy from the upper decks come down and try to shoot the half-court shot for $1 million, because it's cheap. It's something that'll keep people entertained while halftime happens. And if this kid can come in there and say, hey, listen, if you want to see a 20-year-old who, you know, has put together a very competent kind of, illusion show, And I would assume, I mean, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to say that, you know, he's not putting anything forth or anything less than a professional show forth. But at the same time, if he's 20 years old, I think it might be safe to say that his act is still evolving, that, you know, he's still not at his peak as a performer, as maybe he will be as he continues to kind of get out there in front of these gigantic crowds and hone his act. But at the same time, you know, I have no problem. I really just admire the hustle in this kid. I think to come out and say, hey, listen, it's, you know, $2,500 plus expenses, and, you know, he's a college sophomore doing this between classes, that's a pretty sweet gig. I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah, especially, you know, when you're young like that, you have a lot more energy. I mean, when I was first starting off, I'm sure I worked way under price as well, because I had the energy where the older guys don't. They don't want to work. They don't want to do the same thing they've been doing over and over again. After they achieve, you know, a certain amount of fame or notoriety, you kind of you're kind of depending upon that to be the ladder to higher and higher things. But it doesn't always work out because they've got these other guys who are always on your tail. Coming, you know, there's so much competition in everything. You know, I mean, for me, I hate competition. I think it's kind of idiotic. I think that only stupid people compete in some ways in an art, you know, I mean, some things, you know, like sports, you can't help but be competing. But when in an art that's very open and, you know, if you want to call magic an art, in something like this, you just do something different. You may get less bookings out of it, but you may also secure more bookings from it because you're doing something that at least one group of people, I mean, there's so many possible markets out there, you know, that your act or whatever you do may fit into. You know, I mean, I think that a basketball or hockey games and stuff like that is probably a different group of people than what might like my act specifically, but you know, if they like what this guy's doing, well, you know, great, good for him. But I think people do that too much. They all have the same product and they're trying to sell it and, you know, market it rather than have a different product.
Yeah.
That seems dumb to me, but, you know, that's me. So that was actually one of the first things one of the reasons why I went into doing this cartoon thing was that, I was at the castle once again. I don't really want to mention names, but I see people fighting on stage over, you know, who came up with the dove pooping on themselves or who,
yeah.
I mean, they're doing the same style of acts. You know, they're not all doing the same exact tricks, but they're doing the same style of things, a bunch of different people, and they're fighting over it. You know, why? You know, I guess because they went with something that was popular at the time, and now they're all stuck there doing the same thing. You know, they became good at it, and then now they're all kind of stuck there. And so I said, I want to do that. I want to do something that nobody else is doing so I don't have very many competitors, you know, and hopefully I'll be friends with whoever they are. But I don't know. Things don't always work out the way you want.
You can't always get what you want, Dan. But if you try sometimes, you just might find you get what you need. Thank you.
That's a good lyric for yourself.
There we go. I know. Yeah, I just thought of that up off the top of my head. Dan Sylvester has been my guest. SylvesterTheJester.com is where you can find more information on him. If you are not aware, make yourself aware. He is really awesome, and I did promise our mutual friend Simon Drink that I would call you a wanker once during the podcast. So now that that's out of the way,
I can
satiate that. And there we go. Thank you very, very much for taking the time out to be part of the Magic Week in Review, Dan.
Well, you're very welcome.
All right. Again, if you guys have any questions, comments, concerns, complaints, email show@itricks.com. Thank you one more time to trickshopmagic.com for being our sponsor as always. And until next week, friends, I am Justin Robert Young, editor of itricks.com, @JustinRYoung on the Twitter. Bang a gong.
Stamps.com.